2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. The sky's so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis with you this morning. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. As we did last week, Ton, this is the hour.
Hey, this is Dan, the laptop man.
This is the segment at the top of the hour where we do a little feature, and we've been doing a feature in the 10 o'clock hour talking about things to buy for gardeners for Christmas. And today you have an interview for us.
Yes, I interviewed J.D. Gunnell about just some of his favorite things in the garden. And J.D. is quite a practical person, but he also is concerned about a lot of things, and so he has a pretty good mix of things that he likes that would make good gardening gifts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dave, do we have that interview now that we can play with J.D. Gunnell?
I have a favorite shovel, and it's smaller than most shovels. It's almost, it's between a spade and a shovel, so it's a little smaller, but it's called a pony, and they're kind of expensive. They're usually around $70. The reason I like them is they're a forged steel. So when you jump on them, they don't bend or break. They are a little bit smaller. It takes a few more shovels to dig a hole.
Do you know who makes the pony shovel?
Ames carries the pony shovel, and there's another company called Jackson.
You know, keeping on a tool theme, what else do you recommend for listeners?
You're talking to a guy, so I love tools. And when it comes to pruning, having the right tools becomes really crucial. For smaller cuts, obviously, you have your hand shears, a good pair of loppers to increase your reach if you're pruning fruit trees and have to, even berries. I found cutting my blackberries and raspberries down instead of getting close to the thorns, I use my loppers now.
Do you have any brands in particular? And I'll say brands here so we don't single anyone out that you like to use.
I really like Felco, Baco, I know makes some really good ones, Corona. Instead of thinking brands, you have to think of cost. And with everything else in life, the pruners and the tools that you buy, it really is you get what you pay for. So you're going to spend a little bit of money, but you do it once instead of two or three times.
How much should someone be paying to get a decent pair of hand pruners?
Typically, you're spending between $70 to $90 for a good hand pruner.
Which seems like a lot of money when you can pick some up at the hardware store for $10.
I've purchased little $5-$10 hand pruners from the stores, and I made one cut and bent the blade. Make the investment to get some good tools.
Ruin your rotator cuffs, use a bad pair of loppers. I know on a lot of more expensive pruners, one thing I like is that they'll have bumpers on them, so when you close down, it's cushioned and you're not jarring your joints.
Yeah, that's a must, especially on the loppers.
So do you have any other gift ideas in mind?
In the dark, dreary months of winter, I know a lot of people that struggle just with the seasonal depression and disorders associated with not being outside in the sun. I've actually started growing seeds indoors and indoor plants just for therapy. You can go online and you can spend anywhere from $150 to $1,000 on these grow lights and the grow light trays. But I have found that That's one of my favorite things to do as I get older, is to grow things, whether it's starting my vegetable starts early or annual plants. Getting somebody set up with some grow lights would be a really great gift.
So other gift ideas.
One thing that's on my mind lately is gearing up for our next Master Gardener series. We teach that in almost, 15 counties now. One of my favorite gifts I've ever given my wife is coming and taking Master Gardener. Got tired of her asking me all the questions in our yard and then having that turn into an argument. So I was like, you know what? You're going to come and take Master Gardener. This is my gift to you. And then you can hear everything that I know, everything that all the other agents know. And it was actually a really fun time for us together to take the class. And I saw the light bulb go on a few times that, oh, that's why JD does all this. In my mind, it's helping people garden better and have more of a say in their own landscape.
Well, any other gift ideas?
There is a plethora of different garden topic books out there that, whether it's local wildflower books or tree selection books, favorite perennials. You know, this time of year when I'm starting to get all of my catalogs from the seed companies and the different bulb companies, it's fun just to peruse through and see what new varieties are out there.
I consider books usually good information that you have on a shelf, very specific, and to where if you jump on the internet, it's still just the Wild West.
Yeah, it is.
Well, JD, I appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. And feel free to look at that list and buy something for me.
Yeah, my favorite book right now is a succulent book that I'm reading. Especially, you know, with my obsession of succulents over the past year, it's been fun to just read about different varieties and different ideas for using them. And yeah, books are awesome.
They are. I don't maintain a large library, but I maintain a library of books I use a lot. And for me, books from the American Horticultural Society are very readable, but science-based. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know somebody that just decided to plant something and write a book about it with not a lot of background in it. So if you can find books from the American Horticultural Society, no matter the topic, I found that they are all very good.
I'm just wondering, are some of those books available electronically?
Most likely on Kindle.
Right, okay.
They would be.
That's not my favorite way to read, I will just be honest. There's something about just sitting in bed reading a book that,
yes,
I love.
I mean, for homeowners, and I found that I think last year they were out of print. You could still find used copies on eBay and Amazon. But the American Horticultural Society Guide to Plant Propagation, mm-hmm, is thorough, but it just uses real basic common language and basic methods to get things done. And so if you enjoy plant propagation, one of the best ones out there. Another one that I reference quite frequently is the American Horticultural Society Guide to Pruning. And that's another very good one. Extensive, but simple to read.
Great ideas. Enjoyed the interviews the last couple of weeks.
Thanks
for doing that, Tom. And the number to call with your questions, we have callers waiting, 801-575-8255. We also have texters waiting. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and your text questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to Dorothy in Riverton. Good morning, Dorothy, and what is your question?
To Trium euonymus and spirea.
Well, you actually have a lot of time, because you don't want to really start pruning the spirea until after they bloom. Because you can prune them in mid-March, but you'll lose some of the blossoms. And the euonymus you can prune at the same time. You actually should not be pruning right now.
Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. And, the next texter, their question is, when is the best time to prune or trim lilac bushes?
Okay. So
After they bloom.
This is truth because it's on the radio. And anything you hear on the radio. If someone is tempted.
It's truth when Ton says it.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
If you're just itching, to go out there and do your pruning like a gambling addict to get to Wendover, you need to put those pruners away and give them to someone to hide just so that the urge leaves. Go to a movie, go golfing, go to sleep, do the dishes, remodel your home.
Do something else.
Yes, but the fall, any month that ends in R is not a good month to prune because the plants are not completely dormant.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in the 40s, 50s, sometimes 60s, and the temperatures are going to start into the 40s later in the next week. And because of that, there's still some functions going on, and pruning stimulates growth and delays dormancy. And so the soonest that a homeowner or a hobbyist should start to prune is in mid-January. And there are shade trees and other trees that you can start pruning then, such as walnuts and maples so that they don't bleed all over, that you can start. But even then, only if you need to. We don't prune because it makes us feel good. I opened up that tree. Well, that's fine, but why?
Right.
So you need to know the reasons behind pruning, because it's just pruning is damaging a plant. It just automatically. You trimmed it. You've damaged it. And you go out there and all of a sudden the trees get angry and they get back at you. And so when I'm driving down the road and I see a 60-foot elm with witch's brooms on its tips because it was pruned improperly that grow 20 or 30 feet long, those are going to fall over and they potentially hit your house, hit cars. And so you really need to know why you're pruning, how to do it, and the proper time of year. And the fall is not that time.
I just think the weather is so nice. We just want to get out there and do some things in our yard to make it look better. So I'm going to take the pruning questions that we have right now so we can just cover them, right?
Okay.
So when can you prune a pear tree?
Mid-March.
Okay. The next one, what is the best way to trim a smoke bush?
Okay, the smoke bush they have the really fine, frilly flowers on them that don't look like flowers. They get the name because they look really wispy and unique plant.
Mm-hmm.
But the smoke bush are one that you actually can cut down within a couple of feet of the ground every year in the spring and sometime February, March, and let them regrow because they will get a lot bushier and have a lot better look to them because they can get a little bit rangy over time. So one thing with the smoke bush, a lot of times they're called purple smoke bush, that is green in the summer, has similar flowers, but it has a lot better form. Its branches don't die over the winter, and it is gorgeous in the fall. It's becoming more available, and that's one I would consider as American smoke bush because you get the look, but it can make a great fall addition to the yard.
Okay, I'm writing that down. American smoke bush. Okay, we have a couple minutes before the bottom of the hour news. Next person says they have a potted Myers lemon tree. They move it inside on days like today. It's starting to bloom, and they noticed a black bug like a fruit fly. So do they need to worry about that? What do they do?
You always worry about insects on your plants in the winter. It doesn't mean that you need to go nuclear immediately.
Don't go nuclear.
But that Meyer lemon is going to need to be isolated from other houseplants for observation. So I wouldn't put it outside anymore. And it's just, we're going to be cold. Put it in a room.
For this season.
For this season. Put it in a room on its own near a bright window and watch it for a couple of months. And if all of a sudden you start to see more black bugs or mealy bugs, scales, things of that nature, then you can combat them with that plant isolated. After you deal with that plant, you go to the kitchen and immediately wash your hands before handling other houseplants.
because the bugs can be on your
You can
hands?
Transfer eggs. You can transfer. I mean, aphids are so small. Spider mites are so small. You would not feel them. But then even if you have one and you go from your Meyer Lemon to your Pothos and you're had.
Okay. I'm going to move
on to. So sanitation is important.
A nicer topic then. Carla's no longer on the line, but she'd have a question that we could answer without her being on the line. And that is how to get orchids to rebloom.
Orchids, there's several species, and so there just isn't one trick. But one thing to know is that they all require bright light, not direct sun. And then there's several species that have different temperature requirements. So you need to keep track of what kind of orchid you have. But when an orchid is done blooming, it will have between a 6 and a 9 month rest period that it'll just sit there. And all of a sudden you'll see maybe some new leaf formation and new flower bud formation. And it will start to rebloom if the environment is correct. But light levels that are too low, excuse me, and temperatures that are too high are really common to the things that prevent them from reblooming.
So what's too high for a temperature?
Anything above 85, but a lot of times you won't get flower bud formation if it's above 75 for that a particular species. So you really need to know what kind of orchid you have, because they have not wildly different requirements, but they do have different requirements to where one might be happy at 75 or 80, where another one's happier between, 65 and 75.
Right. Okay, we'll take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We'll be back with more of your calls and questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.